Good morning. This meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order. Today is Friday, March 29th. Where did March go? And the time is 8:01 a.m. Members of House Education present are Representative Josh Reback, Representative Chris Tuck, Representative and Vice Chair, excuse me, Co-Chair of the Committee, Representative Amy Story, Representative Delana Johnson, and Representative Grier Hopkins, and myself, Harriet Drummond, co-chair. Representative Zolkowski is excused today. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, please, everyone, silence your cell phones. Today, our recording secretary is Selman Holland, and Eileen Keim is our LO moderator, assisting with tech and teleconferencing support. Thank you both. Today, we will be hearing one bill, House Bill 24, Limited Teacher Certificates and Languages. Would you please come forward, Representative Christ Tompkins, and your aide, and put your name and affiliation on the record.
Thank you.
Good morning,
Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, District 35, rural Southeast Alaska.
For the record, John Scanlon, staff to Rep. Christ Tompkins.
All right. Good morning. Go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you. House Bill 24 is reactivated from the previous legislature, and I know familiar to 3-6, it's really half of you, and passed the House 40-0 in identical form as is on your desk right now in the last legislature, and we're back. And we're back for a couple of reasons. There's great interest in the subject from districts both rural and urban around Alaska. It's actually a sort of wonderfully unifying issue for both sides of the rural-urban divide. For many urban districts, there are immersion language programs, namely within Anchorage School District, or immersion language charter schools, namely in the MAT-SU, that are sort of concerned about this issue of getting fluent speakers into their classrooms to support their immersion language programs. And for rural districts, there's a lot of growing interest in immersion native language education. HB 24 creates an additional sort of category for getting a limited teacher certificate, aka a Type M certificate, that's sort of a ideally a stepping stone for teachers who are fluent in a language to support an immersion language program who are not yet fully certificated. And a Type M or limited teacher certificate comes about when the school board of the district says we want to apply for a limited teacher certificate for teacher X, for John or Jane Doe, and that goes forward, and the State Board of Education considers that request. And if that request or application is granted, the limited teacher certificate is granted for a period of 1 year. A number of school districts around Alaska have spoken for, because of different situations with different fluent speakers who, for whatever reason, the district or district leadership feel would be hugely helpful for their immersion language program, feel that this would be an important tool for those districts to be able to further the goals of their immersion language education. So in a snapshot, that's the limited teacher certificate, and I might defer to John Scanlon in my office to clean up any sloppiness in my introduction or to elaborate on any aspects of the bill.
For the record, John Scanlon, staff rep, Chris Tompkins. At a high level, language immersion programs are an educational model used widely across the country, across the world, and increasingly across Alaska, in which at least 50% of the instructional time, including content areas such as science or math or history, are taught in a target language. So in the United States, that would be a non-English language, such as Spanish or UPIC or German. And one of the biggest challenges that our office has heard that these programs face is that there's a limited pool of fully certificated teachers who also have the necessary language abilities. Many fluent speakers who are well suited for language immersion programs don't have full teacher certification for reasons such as limited English proficiency, advanced age, or familial responsibility. And the way House Bill 24 addresses this challenge, as Rep. Chris Tompkins noted, is by amending the state's existing limited teacher certificate program. And as he noted, you might be familiar with these certificates by the name of Type I or Type M. In general, limited certificates can be issued on a case-by-case basis at the request of the school district and only at the request of the school district for teachers with a specific subject area expertise for which there are very few fully certified bachelor degree trained teachers. These limited certificates, in essence, allow schools to capture known local talent and bring that into the classroom, local talent that isn't generally available in local teacher applicant pools. Currently, there are limited certificates that exist for vocational or technical education, Alaska Native culture and language, and for military sciences, such as ROTC programs. What House Bill 24 adds is that it would authorize the State Board of Education to create a new type of limited certificate specific to teaching and language immersion programs. It would be case by case, and there would be numerous checks on it. The State Board of Education would be authorized to write regulations to ensure, and I read from the bill, a certificate holder demonstrates instructional skills and subject matter expertise sufficient to assure the public that the person is competent as a teacher. But to be clear, under House Bill 24, the State Board of Education would be empowered to write these regulations and create the certificate, but they're not required. Additionally, school districts would retain, as they have now, complete discretion as to who they request these certificates for or don't request these certificates for. School districts would have, of course, the power to decide whether they believe someone has the qualifications to teach in their district. And as Rep. Chris Tompkins stated, the certificates are only valid for the district in which the certificate's issued, and the certificate would be issued for a one-year probationary period with the opportunity for renewal pending the district affirming that certificate holders' instructional skills and subject matter expertise as borne out from a year of experience. So at a high level, House Bill 24 is drafted to meet the specific need that we heard that language immersion programs are facing.
Right. Thank you. Any questions? Representative Tucker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just looking at the old statutes, because this is a repeal and replace, it looks like that what you're doing is you're opening it up for the immersion programs, because we already have Alaska Native language and culture written in there. And then it looks like you added some additional requirements. Do you mind reading again the regulation part, the may and the shall? Because I got lost on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like the department may do regulations, but isn't required to do regulations. And if there are regulations, then they shall issue the certificates in the language or tested in the language of that particular test. Is that only for native languages? Because I noticed that there's also military sciences, vocational and technical education, that kind of stuff as well.
Correct. So to take that through the chair, Representative Tuck, to address your questions in sequence, House Bill 24 authorizes the State Board of Education to create a limited certificate for teaching in a language that is not English, but it does not require the State Board to do that. And the State Board would have a great deal of latitude in drafting those regulations. Regulations under A4, which pertains to the certificate that would be for language immersion programs, there would be a limitation placed on that, in that a certificate holder for language immersion programs would not be able to be required to achieve a minimum score on an examination unless that examination is given in the instructional language for which the limited certificate is valid. In practice, that would mean if a district was requesting that you receive a limited certificate for teaching in UPIC, the school board could not, through regulations, could not require that you pass an examination in English. Of course, the local school board does retain that power and could administer that as a requirement. But that is the sole distinction, and it was included directly in response to specific instances that were brought to our office, and that otherwise, you know, individuals who would be or who districts felt would be well suited for their language immersion programs weren't able to get into the classroom solely because they couldn't pass the English examination.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Additional questions? Representative Story.
Yes. I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I know we are trying to revitalize the languages and move as quickly as we can, and this seems like a step to be doing that. I'd like to disclose that I have a daughter who is a Tlingit learner and teaching in an immersion preschool program right now, and some of the people you suggested might be interested in this. There are a lot of people of all ages having a interest in languages and learning, and I see many of them being wanting to apply for this or talk to their local boards. And I see here that it says each year the person would have to I guess my question is it lasts 1 year and then they have to renew with the local board, or who would they renew with?
Through the chair, Story. So under House Bill 24, the limited certificate would be valid initially for a 1 year probationary period, and then the renewal periods would be set in regulation by the State Board of Education. That said, the local school district would retain full discretion as to renewal if they didn't want to, you know, pursue the renewal of a certificate holder certificate, they wouldn't have to do that.
Follow up? Of course.
And so the process is it with renewal, how does that change from the first application? Is it a follow-up? Is it another assessment test, or do you know if it would be just a matter of assessing how things are going and continuing on?
Through the chair, Chair Story, my understanding is that the renewal criterion would be set in regulation by the State Board.
A comment, just I know sometimes applying for things can be a rigorous process, which it should be, and so sometimes I think renewals hopefully are not as certainly they want to be make sure the person is qualified, but hopefully not take as much time. And that's just a comment on that. And then if I could have another follow-up.
Go ahead, Representative.
It seems like the goal, of course, is to have at least half day in the language wanting to learn, and immersion is really the full day. So the person would actually have to be getting permission, I see, to be teaching many subjects other than English, science, math, the whole day in the language. I know that is the goal. And so in item four, it just says any subject, so I'm just assuming a person, the board could just list all the subjects as what the person is, they're desiring that person to teach in. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story. Anyone else? I do have a few myself. Representative Story, line of questioning reminded me, in an immersion program, generally, there are there's subject matter expertise in both the language and the academic subject area. So, if say a Yupik language speaker taught math, say there and I don't know how a non-UPIC speaker would know that the math was being taught properly, but I also assume that there are English language speaking teachers that trade off with the immersion language speaker, is the way I understand immersion language programs to work, so that the math was taught both in UPIC and in English. Am I understanding that correctly?
Chair Drummond, through the chair, subsection C of the bill requires that a limited certificate holder must, or a limited certificate must specify not only the language for which it's valid, but also the specific subject areas. So there would be two checks in this instance, speaking to that situation. Mm-hmm. First, the local school board would have the discretion to put forth the name or not put forth the name based on whether they felt that that individual was qualified to teach in that specific subject area in math in this instance. And then the kind of judged against the regulations that the state board would set out, the Department of Education would also have authority to assess if they felt that that applicant or potential certificate holder also had the subject matter expertise. So my understanding is that two-fold process should help speak to issues with the situation that you outlined.
And would the state board have a develop an examination process to determine whether they think the applicant is qualified?
Chair Drummond, that would be one option that the state board could develop, as long as they weren't administering a test that was in a language other than what the certificate holder would be instructing in. I would also note that for some of the other existing limited certificates, there are various ways that the state board identifies that a certificate holder can demonstrate subject matter expertise. That includes a resume that shows a certain number of years of experience in that realm, includes letters of recommendations, includes other means to demonstrate both instructional competency and subject matter expertise.
I would add, Chair Drummond, and for the record, Jonathan Christ-Tompkins, District 35, that would be the state board's prerogative through their basically empowerment to set forth regulations and sort of craft and sort of customize what requirements seem appropriate. So that would be sort of the first sort of level of empowerment the state board has to sort of speak to the scenario you're asking about. And then the second scenario is ultimately authorizing or granting certificates or declining to do so in specific instances, regardless of what regulations the state board might promulgate.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was looking at this, and I remember exactly, right? This isn't exactly a language immersion. I mean, I'm a big fan of the language immersion schools. We have a number of them in Madison Valley, but what we're talking about isn't really an immersion program, right? I mean, we're talking about bits and pieces of the curriculum being taught in another language instead of having a whole outline curriculum that would go with that program. I mean, I know it's not in the bill because it's not that long, but if you would explain to me how you envision this, and you've already done that, but how you envision this working, and how, is there any kind of native language immersion programs already that's like a full-on immersion program?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, and for the record, Jonathan Christ-Tompkins, District 35. I think sort of two parts to that question. First, whether there are native language immersion programs in Alaska. Right off the top of my head, there are two. There's a longstanding program in Bethel, which the target language is Central Yupik. It's an elementary school. It's part of LKSD in Bethel, and that's an immersion language program that's been I think, probably the sort of has flown the flag for successful native language immersion in Alaska. And then Anchorage School District has recently started a Yupik language immersion program within the district. I think this is the first academic year, if I'm not mistaken. So those are the two examples that I'm aware of, and I might be forgetting one in this moment. I know there's a lot of interest in Juneau and in Sitka for Tlingit, for instance, although nothing has gotten off the ground in terms of the school district. So there might be more to come. But to the first part of your question, I think I'm inferring it as you're asking it, in that this bill really would relate to immersion programs as we know them. Fronteras, for instance, this is right in their wheelhouse. Maybe part of what you're asking is in immersion programs, and actually John can correct me if I'm misstating anything. You've got the target language, and as I understand it from teachers and principals of immersion programs, you've got the target language, and usually it's a blend between the target language and English, and that blend can be as high as 95.5 or 100.0 even. But I think by design and intention, usually there is some degree of split. 70% of the academic day is in the target language and 30% is in English, and I know there's, as I understand it from talking with immersion language practitioners, as a student sort of moves through the program year after year, that blend sort of stair steps. And if I can remember correctly, I think usually the target language percentage goes down and the English language percentage goes up. And then by the end of the program, the student leaves the program and is fully fluent in the target language. But I'm going to look to John to correct any misstatements I might have just made.
Continue.
Just to clarify, I guess what I'm asking then is, how do you envision this actually working in the schools? Would it be just maybe one class, one teacher comes, one community member comes in and teaches one class, or so I guess what I'm asking, so it doesn't get too piecemealed, for want of a better term, in the educational process. So you have this someone that wants to do something with language. What does that mean exactly? If it's not an immersion program, what is it?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, to that question, the goal and intent, and I think if this were passed, also the practice of this legislation would be able to apply only to immersion programs. So if a district just wants to do a one-off class on Russian or whatever, that you wouldn't have somebody who lives in the community who speaks fluent Russian coming in for an hour today to teach Russian be certificated under this, because, as you know, that's sort of a piecemeal, non-immersion kind of situation. And that this is really designed for districts that have sort of scaled up. They've found, 5 to 6 people, that can constitute a real bona fide program that has, multi-year longitudinality, and will basically allow any student who enters that program, 3 to 5 years later, to leave as a fluent student, and has the sort of resources to be in the target language basically from the day the bell rings in the morning to the time the bell rings in the afternoon. So definitely not meant as sort of to accommodate that kind of piecemeal approach. And I know the department is, understanding of that intent, and I think aligned with that intent. And I think we would, that piecemeal approach just wouldn't be granted by the department.
Thank you, Chair. We've been talking consistently about this in terms of Alaska Native and traditional and indigenous languages, yet the title of the bill is an act relating to instruction in a language other than English, and I don't see anywhere in here in my quick read through where it says specifically what languages it would apply to. How would it only apply to indigenous languages and not, say, a Spanish immersion school?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, actually you're right, so it's meant for both world and native languages, both. So it's inclusive to both, and actually, while there are in Bethel and in Anchorage and in some rural districts a lot of interest in native language immersion. This bill is sort of being championed as much by the world language community in Anchorage with Spanish. And Anchorage, there's a German, a Japanese, a French immersion language programs, and more that I can't name off the top of my head. And so this bill actually is equally aiming to help and bolster those programs.
Continue.
Just a comment then. I find it hard to believe that we have a hard time finding certified teachers who are fluent in Spanish or French or Russian, as those are taught in many places. And there are currently a lot of immersion schools, or especially in Anchorage, whether it's Japanese or Spanish, or as you were saying. Why is this necessary to expand it to world languages as opposed to just indigenous languages? I don't understand. I mean, I find it hard to believe that we have a lack of certified teachers that are fluent in that. I can understand why the indigenous language aspect is critical, but why is it needed in other languages? Is there a desire to have, I don't know, Swahili immersion schools, or is it just a problem finding them for Spanish schools?
Representative Hopkins, through the chair, I think a Swahili program would be pretty amazing in Anchorage. Actually, my mom speaks it, so they could bring her in. To the question about the need, I was actually completely sort of unaware. I mean, being in Sitka, where we don't have an immersion world language program, I was completely unaware of the need, and I would actually defer to invited and or public testifiers and written testimony on the need. I know Brandon Locke at Anchorage School District, Jennifer Schmidt-Hutchins at Fronteras, which is a Spanish language immersion school, and a number of others around Alaska can sort of speak to, I think, the realities of trying to run an immersion program. I think it's a bit tougher sledding, certainly than I knew going into this language. I mean, I think it's fair to say, for me, the initial impetus for this bill was native language immersion programs, but I mean, the challenges for native languages and world languages were the same, and as we sort of went down this road, we became aware that there was this world language community in Alaska, which is growing, and I mean, a lot of the staff in this building who've come through ASD either themselves went through immersion language programs or their peers did, and I mean, just talk with any of the staff in the hall, and really remarkable anecdotes about, you know, sixth graders being fluent in Japanese and, you know, these plus amazing life skills. Anyway, just to say, I was totally unaware of it, but actually really kind of blown away by the degree to which there was a lot of eagerness to have an additional tool in the toolbox. So I would respectfully defer to the testifiers.
Okay. If I may, Madam Chair. Oh,
done. Okay. Representative Tuck, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right now, excuse me, in statute we already have Alaska Native Languages and Culture. This is expanding it to all those other immersion programs as well. I know that Sand Lake, the Japanese immersion program in Anchorage, they would like to have teachers come out.
I just had a couple other questions. If someone is not a certified teacher in a traditional subject matter, math, whatever, and they're brought in under this limited teacher certificate under language, would they cross over and be able to teach the a traditional language subject, or would it just be confined to the language itself?
Through the chair, Rep. Johnson, I would point you to the last sentence of subsection C, and in which it specifies that the subject and instructional language for the certificate must be, or let me to rephrase, that when a district is putting forth a name for an applicant to be considered for a limited certificate, they must specify this subject or subject areas and instructional language for which the certificate is valid.
Oh,
go ahead.
Thank you. And then lastly, it's not grade specific. It could go all the way through from K through 12, right? It's not like just elementary school. I'm just double checking on these things. Thanks.
Through the chair, Rep. Johnson, as I understand it, the majority of immersion programs in Alaska currently are targeted toward the younger or earlier years of education, but I believe that would be something that the State Board of Education would outline or could outline in its regulations.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Story, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the goal would be as the students age up, like if they started the program immersion, kindergarten through fifth, they would want to continue all the way through high school. And so I think certification would, the board would be looking at that depending upon the goals of the school board and their program. And at the same time, I think there are some preschool funding that boards do either through Title I monies, and it could, if the school board desired and had a preschool program, their four-year-olds or whatever, I see this as allowing the board to apply to the to deed or whoever to get that permission. So that's my understanding, and maybe that could be clarified if that's correct or not. And another, I think it might be interesting and helpful to us here to hear some different models of immersion schools, so we have more of a picture how that could look.
I have several questions myself. Are there currently programs that are not being delivered for lack of available teachers with this type of proposed certificate?
For the record, John Scanlon, staff to Rep. Chris Tompkins. Through the chair, Chair Drummond, I would defer to invited testimony to speak to that in particular, but as I understand it, over the past several years, our office has heard from several language immersion programs who've spoken to that.
Okay, and for the record, Jonathan Grace Tompkins, District 35, to that question, Madam Chair, my recollection from in particular conversations with ASD is that sort of teacher recruitment or having the sort of flexibility or dexterity to recruit teachers, sort of including in the scenario that Representative Tuck described, is often the limiting factor for starting the immersion language programs in ASD, where there's a lot of demand from parents and students and often limited supply, and leadership side to sort of expand and grow these programs. And then I know for districts that are considering sort of dipping their toes in the immersion language waters, my understanding from conversations is that this is also often a, if not the limiting factor as well. Teacher effectively being able to have enough language faculty, if you will, to have a full-on program.
You have referred to testimony, invited testimony. I assume that's not today, but perhaps the next time we hear this bill. And also, if there are questions of the department, I know the department's not available today because they're the State Board of Education is having its meeting, and they're there. So the next time we hear this bill, I assume you would have invited testimony ready, and we could open it up for testimony.
Madam Chair, for the record, John Craze Tompkins. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, great. And I just wanted to comment that early on, you talked about a limited pool of teachers that are fluent in the target language, particularly in Alaska Native languages, as exemplified by the language emergency bill from the last legislature. We are losing language, fluent language speakers in many of the Alaska Native languages. And to me, this is really important to be holding on to those skills, and for elders who are fluent in their language but not fluent in English. You did say earlier they wouldn't necessarily need to be tested in English, but in their language, it's really important to hold on to those precious skills of the elders. I know that. I took French for 7 years, starting in junior high school, and I still remember my French teacher spoke only French to us from the moment she greeted us at the door in the hallway and invited us in until the moment she let us out of there, and it was an amazing experience. And again, I personally didn't speak English till I went to kindergarten. I was born into a Greek-American family. I'm not looking to start a Greek language immersion program, but it helps to be utilizing those languages and those folks who have the skills and the language before we lose them. And to me, that's very important. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't realize until introduction of guests on the House floor that we had a lot of code talkers. Alaska Native code talkers. I knew there was some Indian and Native American Natives, but I didn't realize that a lot of that translated up here. And so, looking at this bill, I know this doesn't have anything to do with this, but on the bill, there is in your research of looking at this bill, because not only do we have Alaska Native culture, and you guys are adding other non-English speaking languages, we have military science right here. Any idea? Is that like JROTC, or what is the military sciences component? Did you happen to find out as this bill is being drafted?
For the record, John Scanlon, staff rep Chris Tompkins, through the chair, Representative Tuck. Correct my understanding as that relates to JROTC programs.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And for the record, John Chris Romans, I'd also add, I think the Alaska Military Youth Academy, I think that particular provision might relate to that as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I can't help but imagine in this environment that we're in right now where there's a threat of big cuts to education. I believe one of the programs that was slated for a cut was the military, the Alaska Military Youth Program. I don't think those cuts are going to happen in this next session, in this next budget year. But is there any consideration given to what happens if we have large cuts in education? That's going to make implementation of this kind of program much more difficult.
For the record, John and Grace Tompkins, to the chair. Interesting question.
It may be rhetorical.
you don't say. I imagine every district will be weighing priorities if there's less resources in order to potentially run language immersion language programs. I think especially outside of just a couple of districts like Bethel, because those language programs are not sort of the default, but they're sort of auxiliary programs, and usually it's the auxiliary stuff that's the first to go. But I would best defer to the districts themselves to speak to what the priorities would be.
Okay. Representative Hopkins.
Thank you. Correct me if I'm wrong, many of the immersion language schools in Anchorage and around the state are charter schools, correct?
Not all.
Not all, but many of, I know like the Japanese ones in Anchorage is not and things like that, but the UPI one in Anchorage is, and is the UPIC one in Bethel also is?
For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, Representative Hopkins through the chair, it's a mix. In short, Fronteras is a charter, Sand Lake is not, the Bethel Immersion Language School is just a proper elementary school, part of LKSD. I'm 85% sure. It's really a mix.
Okay, thank you. I have concerns about the financial impacts to the districts of opening up numerous charter schools for additional languages with uncertified teachers to teach in them, and districts have a very limited ability to say no to opening up new charter schools, and they have a hefty financial impact on the district as it is, with multi-million dollars of requirements when those schools are first opened. So I do have a concern about opening up or financially impacting schools in these times of potential cuts at millions of dollars, and then having uncertified teachers teaching them. If it's a last native indigenous language, I completely understand. That is something I'm fully supportive of. And if it's an understanding that Anchorage is the most diverse school district in the entire country, I understand that there is a heavy need for more available language programs in those schools. It just concerns me if they start opening that door for charter schools and for that financial impact being taught for a Spanish immersion class. Spanish immersion charter school, I feel that there are plenty of certified teachers for that language and languages like French, which I also took in school, and Spanish and Russian and things like that. So I do have a concern about how broad this about these problems that they're running into in different places.
The having been on the board that chartered several charter schools, it's a really long involved process, and there are startup costs that are additional to the basic operation of the school, but because the students are coming from within the school district, generally speaking, that BSA amount moves from the regular school program to the charter school program, follows the child, in other words. So it doesn't necessarily add funding as long as the number of students isn't increasing. I think it would be valuable for us to have a list of all the different language programs in the state. For example, Anchorage's Japanese immersion program has been going on for decades. Mm-hmm. I know it predates my service on the Anchorage School Board by at least, I don't know, mm-hmm. 5 or 10 years. There are two Spanish immersion programs, one at Government Hill and one in Chugiak, I believe. And all the others have since followed. And I think the UPIC language program, the Alaska Native Charter School, has been in existence for several years now. Remember the Teacher of the Year that I introduced a couple of weeks ago? She teaches in that program. And it's been in existence, I think, for 10 or 11 years. As far as the language component, I'm not too sure about, but I think it would be important for us to just to get a handle on how many such schools are in existence in the state. I don't know if it would be up to us to come up with it or the bill sponsor, but I think it would be fairly easy to do. And also the balance between regular school district programs and charter programs and how those work.
For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins and Chair Drummond, a great idea, and I saw John scribble down a note as you were talking, so consider the ball in our court to follow up.
Great. I appreciate that. Any more questions? Representative Story.
Yes, I know that the Alaska Association of School Boards has been trying to help districts meet this great desire to revitalize our indigenous languages in the state. And the commentary just came out today highlighting some school board members actually went over to New Zealand through grants and different things through the Association of Alaska School Boards just this fall. And the Maori language there has grown from like 30 grandparents actually really wanting this, has seen the language lost among their grandchildren to 4,000 fluent speakers, youth, have grown the program and full high school, and they've grown it with schools as they've gone up. And so there is information to read about that in the commentary. I think we all get that. But I think there's a lot of information if we looked at different models, because I know what my understanding is, the whole day needs to be immersion, all the subjects in immersion. And so I look forward to learning about different models.
For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins and Representative Story through the chair. I should first note ASB also is in support of this legislation. I think their letter came in just past the document deadline, so it may not be with members, but should be by Monday, or we'll distribute by email. And actually, ASB is, as you note, Representative Story, been doing great work on language education and has a partnership with a lot of rural school districts to do these. It's not immersion language education, but nonetheless really exciting, doing these sort of picture books that are narrated by students and the native language. And I sat down with Steve and Norm from ASB to look at that. And to your broader point about Maori in New Zealand, not to sort of put cold water on the subject, because what you highlight is a really successful and exciting model of language revitalization. It's really, really hard, and the success rate infinitesimally low to successfully revitalize a language, and many more languages die than are successfully revitalized. And I think the sort of sober, like, factual premise is important as we consider that in Alaska with our 20 native languages. The few, and they're kind of high profile, but there are very few successful case studies in the world, and Maori and Hawaiian are actually two of them. To some extent, Gaelic and Manx near England, and actually Hebrew, I think, at one point was a dead language until it wasn't, and that's, of course, very much alive now. But very, very few successful case studies, and so it's really like the weight of the world is kind of against communities that are attempting to successfully revitalize a language. And I think here in Southeast, Tlingit is an incredibly exciting case study, and what your daughter is doing, Representative Story, I think is really inspirational. And I think part of the motivation for me is there's sort of everything working against you if you're trying to save a language from extinction. And in Alaska, that's just about every language here, mm-hmm. every native language. Mm-hmm. Central Yupik and to some extent Nupiak are both in slightly better sort of position in terms of number of fluent speakers alive. But sort of every tool, every way to assist, every way to help, in my mind, is sort of worthy, and not just worthy, but also urgent. So I think you highlight a really sort of important issue, on a high level, it strikes a deep chord with me.
Go ahead, Representative Story.
I wanted to add that it's taken them 30 years to go from 30 children to 4,000 children, so it's something that has to have a deep desire, persistent, and efforts like this to make it happen, to keep these languages that we really desire to have in our state.
All right, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is really something I think it's going to be for the department. But I guess I would like to, if they're going to be here on Monday, so I'd like to hear from them about what they're thinking of when they talk about the certificate or an assessment or the is there other programs that they enter, that they issue this similar type of limited certificate, and how that actually works. So anyway, that's what I'm asking. Would like to ask a question along those lines come Monday.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, noted, and we'll transmit that to the department so they're on notice.
All right. And any further questions or discussion at this time? All right. Hearing none, I'm going to hold this bill. Our next meeting will be on Monday, April 1st. No fooling. At 8 a.m. Fool around with 8 a.m., where we will take invited and public testimony on this bill, House Bill 24, and we will also hear for the first time House Bill 75, Internet for Schools and Funding. And with that, we are adjourned at 8:51 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam.